the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, I'm back from vacation. Had a great time in Denver. Always a great city to check out. I've checked out Denver 3 years in a row, so definitely love the place. It's always great to check out the legal cities, especially Colorado is on some when it comes to legalized weed. They know their shit. They got dispensaries out the ass, and they have product out the ass, and definitely by far, out of all the legal states that I have visited throughout the last few years, Denver or just the state of Colorado does it on a whole other level, and I fucking love it. But even beyond the dispensaries, Denver's a great city. They have some great restaurants. Actually, the restaurant that I liked the most this time around that we checked out was an Asian restaurant called Cholon that is just in the middle of downtown. Great Asian restaurant, but by far my favorite dispensary. I'd say it's been top notch every time I've checked it out the last 3 years in a row is a place called The Green Solution. Great product, and just always have great weed, and I just love walking in there. But also, some new product this year is Mike Tyson. He actually has his own line of weed. It's called Tyson 2.0. And let me tell you, I tried one of the pre-rolls last night before bed, and let me tell you, that shit knocked me the fuck out. So Mike Tyson's weed, if you get a chance, you should check it out if you partake, because it's definitely worth it. And I mean, I had to try it just because I am a big Mike Tyson fan, but it turned out good. So definitely enjoyed myself there. I also ended up going to Colorado Rockies game. They played the San Diego Padres. Saw them on Thursday. It was a day game. The Rockies ended up winning the game 8-5. And it was a cool stadium too. It was actually a good game. The Rockies actually came out and it was like 5-0 to start, but then the Padres started getting it going in the fifth or the sixth inning, and they ended up tying it up. It was 5-5, but then the Rockies ran away with it and ended up getting the win. But it was a cool play, cool stadium, nice little spot downtown. Parking was easy. Everything about it was very easy to get to, and it was just a cool stadium. So yeah, definitely, if you get a chance to check out a Rockies game, you should definitely do that. I do have one gripe, and it's not about this game in particular. It's something that's been happening over the last like five to 7 years now, where games and concerts, they're not offering physical tickets anymore. It's now like, oh, you get your stupid digital ticket on your phone. And maybe y'all don't save your tickets, but I'm a motherfucker who has always saved my tickets. Since the very first concert I ever went to, NSYNC in 1998, I still have that ticket, and I have every single ticket from every concert and sporting event that I've ever attended. So it kind of pissed me off that I did not get a physical ticket for this game, but I did screenshot the ticket and printed it out because that's how I do. But come on, people. Some of us motherfuckers still want physical tickets. You should at least give us the option to, hell, I'll pay more to get a physical ticket just because I like having the physical ticket. So, motherfuckers, give me a goddamn physical ticket. I know the rest of you cheap motherfuckers don't care about that shit, but I do. I really like that shit. So, I would like physical tickets from here on out. I doubt anybody's going to be listening, especially because COVID really definitely ramped up the no physical ticket thing, but I would like some motherfucking physical tickets. Come on now. But now that we're speaking about baseball, let's get to the Trop 10 MLB Power Rankings for this week. Starting with number one, the Los Angeles Dodgers. They have creeped back up into the number one spot. They are 60-30, so they are the first team in the NL to reach the 60 win mark. They're 9-1 in their last 10 games. They've won four in a row. They just swept the Angels this weekend. They also played the St. Louis Cardinals earlier in the week. Currently, they are the best team in the NL. And basically, they're doing it with their pitching, which is crazy because you know, they keep getting injured, but they tend to overcome all these injuries. You know, Kershaw, he's even though he's old, he's still playing great. And then you got Tony Gonsolin, who is just having a spectacular season, who's been one of the top pitchers in the league overall. Then you have Anderson, who's also having a great year. So overall, the Dodgers are really just dominating with their pitching. And but also behind the plate as well. You got Trey Turner, who's been just consistent all season long. You got Mookie Betts. The only problem he's had this year is his injury so far. But other than the injury, he's been having one hell of a season. And just overall, even though the Dodgers have had quite a few injuries to overcome, they've been able to do it. So they are number one this week. Then at number two on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I've got the New York Yankees, 64-28 overall on the season, still the best record in the league. But this past week, the last 10 games, they've gone 5-5, so not as good as the Dodgers have done. This week they played the Boston Red Sox and the Cincinnati Reds. But overall, the Yankees are the best team in the league. They're doing it with hitting. They lead the league in home runs and RBIs and just overall hitting it. In general, Aaron Judge, he leads the league in home runs with 33. But also, out of nowhere, Matt Carpenter, the Yankees ended up picking him up off of waivers earlier this season because the Texas Rangers ended up dropping him because he was only batting like a 176. So the Yankees had him down in Triple A. They ended up calling him up. And ever since they called him up, man, Matt Carpenter has been on fire. He's had a couple games where he's had seven RBIs. He's had more than one game where he's hit two home runs. So he's just on fire. And he's definitely been a huge reason as to why the Yankees are playing so well. But they're just absolutely dominating behind the plate. But they also, you know, the pitching has still been very solid as well. So the Yankees still at number two. This week in my top 10 MLB power rankings. Then at number three, a team who I didn't really expect to see up this high, but I had to put them up this high because they have currently the longest winning streak in the league at 14 wins in a row, and that would be the Seattle Mariners. Their overall record is 51-42. This past week, they played the Texas Rangers and the Washington Nationals, but they are just killing it right now. Overall, their pitching, their starting pitching and their bullpen has really dominated, but they have this rookie Julio Rodriguez, who is just lit the league on fire. He's been hitting home runs like no other. He is fast as hell, but he's also great on the defensive side of things as well. But then you've got Ty France, who came back from injury, and it seems that ever since he came back from injury, that this is when the Mariners have really hit their stride. I had to put them up there. I couldn't put them above the Dodgers and the Yankees just because both the Dodgers and Yankees, they're both over 60 wins. And they've been way more consistent throughout the entire season. But the Mariners have had a great 2 weeks right now, and they are really on fire. Especially Julio Rodriguez, that guy is he's something else. Then at number four on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Atlanta Braves, overall record of 56-38, 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week they played the Washington Nationals and the New York Mets. You know, Austin Riley, he continues to dominate behind the plate, hitting home runs out of the park. He actually leads the team in home runs. Then you got Ronald Acuna Jr., who just continues to dominate as well. You got Dansby Swanson, who really has kind of come out of nowhere. He's been a quiet shortstop for most of his career, but this year he's really been turning it on, not only defensively, but he's really turned into a big offensive weapon for the Braves. But also their starting pitching and their bullpen has really stepped it up, especially the last couple of months. So the Braves, they're still hot and playing some great baseball right now. Then at number five on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Houston Astros, overall record of 59-32, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Oakland A's and the Los Angeles Angels. You know, Kyle Tucker, he is continuing to hit home runs like no other. He's been a huge offensive force for the Astros all season, but especially this past couple of weeks. Then Jeremy Pena as well. He was basically their only no name on the team, and now he's really also turned it on. He's had a great month. And then, you know, Justin Verlander, he continues to dominate the league. He leads the league right now with 12 wins, and he also just continues to move up the strikeout, all-time strikeout list as well. So Justin Verlander and actually the rest of the starting pitching, I mean, the Astros pitching is the best in the league. Starting pitching for sure. They don't have one weakness when it comes to their starting pitching, and the bullpen doesn't really have any weaknesses either. So the Astros still going strong. Then at number six on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the New York Mets, overall record of 58-35, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Chicago Cubs and the Atlanta Braves. Pete Alonso, he leads the league in RBIs, and he just continues to dominate offensively for the Mets. But also Starling Marte, he's continues to have another great season as well. And then their starting pitcher Peterson this week, he just had an absolutely dominating game where he had 8 strikeouts, you know, it was a battle between them and the Braves, but they also played a good series against the Cubs. So while the Mets, they aren't as dominating as they were to start the season, they're still one of the best teams in the league, especially over in the NL. Then at number 7 on my top 10 MLB power rankings at the Tampa Bay Rays, overall record of 51-41. 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Baltimore Orioles and the Boston Red Sox. They actually basically are the reason why the Orioles were on a tear for a while there. They're still playing great baseball right now, but they were on a tear about a week right before I went on vacation. They were just killing it. But the Tampa Bay Rays actually ended up kind of stopping that winning streak, and they really have... had a good couple of weeks here. You know, Randy Arozarena, he's finally getting things going. And then also Lowe, man, he had a 4-hit game the other day. But their pitching has also just been dominating with Shane McClanahan, just the strikeout king in the league this year. Then at number 8 on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the St. Louis Cardinals, overall record of 50-44, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Cincinnati Reds and the Los Angeles Dodgers. Paul Goldschmidt, man, this guy continues to rake. He hit his 300th career home run this week. But it's not even just the home runs. He knows how to play small ball. He knows how to get... he knows how to just hit it where he needs to, and he's great at scoring runs, and he's just been an all-around great player for the St. Louis Cardinals this season. Definitely a huge NL MVP candidate, at least at this point in the season. Then at number 9 on my top 10 MLB power rankings, my San Francisco Giants, overall record of 48-43, 7-3 in their last 10 games. They are on a 3-game winning streak. They just took 3 out of 4 games from the Milwaukee Brewers this weekend, which is huge. They also played a good series against the Arizona Diamondbacks earlier in the week. I still don't know how I feel about the Giants. I feel like they do need to make a move at some point before the trade deadline. I don't know if they're going to. I don't know if they have. There's some possible rumors that there's a possibility that they might have to go after Soto of the Nationals, but I don't know if that's really going to happen or not. That would be great if it did, but that's basically what the Giants are missing, in my opinion. But hey, they did have a good last week and a half here, especially against the Brewers, who are a really solid team, especially in the NL, and they had a solid week. You know, Webb continues to dominate behind the plate. Rodon continues to dominate behind the plate. But also offensively, it's just basically next man up, and everybody's been getting hits the last couple of weeks, and so the Giants have moved up a bit in my power rankings, but I don't know if I believe in them just yet. And then rounding out my top 10 MLB power rankings this week are the Philadelphia Phillies, overall record of 49-43, 6-4 in their last 10 games. They've won their last three games in a row. This past week, they played the Florida Marlins and the Toronto Blue Jays, two really good teams, especially the Marlins. They just swept the Marlins. Kyle Schwarber, he leads the NL in home runs right now, and he just, it feels like every other game he's got two home runs in each game, so he's having a great season. But then you also have Aaron Nola, who not only has he had a dominating season as well, but he is coming off of a 10-strikeout game where he had 8 scoreless innings pitched, and he almost pitched a perfect game the other day against the Marlins. So the Phillies, while it felt like the beginning of their season, they weren't going to amount to shit so far. Ever since they fired Joe Girardi, they've really turned things around. And, you know, they're overcoming the injury to Bryce Harper. So right now, you know, you got to look at the Phillies and give it up to them. They're playing some great baseball. And, you know, that's the third team from their division that's actually in the top 10 this week. I had the Braves in there and then the Mets as well. So three teams from that division, it's going to be a battle all the way until the end. And you know, we are at the midway point in the season. So there's some league leaders we could talk about here. Before I get to the league leaders, though, I was talking about Juan Soto and possibly being traded from the Nationals. And that's because earlier in the week, Juan Soto ended up turning down a $440 million extension from the Washington Nationals. I don't blame him at all, because you could tell the Nationals are probably not going to be a good team, at least for in the near future. And so if I was him, I probably wouldn't sign with them either, because he's going to get paid regardless. You know, Soto's a young guy. He's proven that he's been a highly touted recruit since before he was drafted. Then when he was drafted and played in the minor leagues with the Nationals, you know, he was highly touted then. And then, you know, he's really been a solid player since the day he hit the league. So regardless of whether it's the Nationals who end up re-signing him or if he goes somewhere else, dude's getting paid. So it's not like he turned down $440 million and he's not going to get that from somewhere else. He's more than likely going to get that and possibly more, because he's definitely a generational player and he's definitely going to change the trajectory of any type of team. So I wouldn't be shocked if the Washington Nationals end up trading him, because if they don't get him through an extension, that more than likely means they're going to lose him. And if they end up losing him, they should at least get something in return. So trading him is probably going to be the best route for them. There's a whole bunch of teams right now in the mix, and so there really isn't any real legit trade destination. Like I just was talking about with the Giants, I would love if they traded for him. I don't know who they could give up. But I would love to see, him in a Giants uniform, because he's exactly, the type of dude that they're missing right now. They're missing a big star, to help complete this team, because, you know, they've got a really solid starting pitching. Their bullpen's okay. And then, you know, the batting lineup's okay. But I kind of feel like if they get a Soto in there, they would actually be a very solid team. I don't know if they'd be able to win the World Series just yet, but they would definitely be a good team. So whoever he goes to, and you know, he could go anywhere. There really isn't a solid, at least, trade suitor at this point in time, but you never know what's going to happen. But like I said, if he doesn't sign an extension with the Nationals, they're more than likely going to trade him, because they want to at least get something out of this deal. And I don't see Soto signing with them, because why the hell would he? The Nationals suck. So why not get paid? He's going to get paid, and hopefully he can go somewhere where he has the opportunity to at least compete and possibly win a World Series, which he more than likely doesn't have that option coming to him playing for the Nationals. All right, and so like I said, league leaders at this current point in time. Let's talk about the division leaders. Right now, the New York Yankees are leading the AL East by 13 games ahead of the Tampa Bay Rays right now. So I think it's safe to say that the Yankees probably have that division wrapped up. Then it's just going to be up to the rest of the teams below them to fight for those, because there are 3 wild card spots this year. So there's a strong possibility that, hey, maybe 3 of those wild card spots could go to these AL East teams, because the AL East is beating up on each other. But the Yankees have such a solid lead And I don't really see them falling apart the second half of the season, so they're probably going to take this division easily. Then over in the AL Central, right now the Minnesota Twins hold a two-game lead over the Cleveland Guardians. So this division is still up for grabs, really, by anybody. And then the AL West, right now, the Houston Astros have a 9-game lead over the Seattle Mariners, who, yes, are on a 14-game winning streak, but the Houston Astros had such a good lead and on them in this division that more than likely I still think the Astros are going to end up taking this division, because the Astros are by far one of the best teams in the league. Like I said, their pitching is the best in the league, and they have no issue scoring. So I see the Astros continuing to dominate this division all the way through the playoffs. Then moving over to the NL East, right now the New York Mets have a 2.5-game lead over the Atlanta Braves, so anything can happen in the East. You got to throw the Phillies in there because while both the Mets and the Braves are playing spectacular baseball right now, you look at the Phillies and they're playing good baseball as well. So you really got to watch out for them over in the East. Then in the NL Central, the Milwaukee Brewers hold a slight half-game lead over the St. Louis Cardinals at this current point in time. So the Central, that can really go to anybody. And I wouldn't be surprised really with either the Brewers or the Cardinals. The Brewers have been the more solid, consistent team this year, but the Cardinals, you can never count them out. They are always in the mix, especially come playoff time. So we'll see what happens in the Central. And then the NL West, it's looking like the Dodgers are going to take this division. They've got a solid 10-game lead right now over the San Diego Padres. They've pretty much held down this division from the start, and it's probably going to be that way all the way to the finish. I don't really see the Padres are a solid team, and they will get Fernando Tatis back at some point this season. But I don't know if he's going to be enough to put them over the edge and beat the Dodgers out. And then, like I said, with my Giants, I don't really know how I feel about them at this point. They're playing pretty solid baseball right now, but you know, as the season wears on, we'll see where they're at. And then as far as league leaders go, right now, the AL home run leader is Aaron Judge with 33 home runs. Not only does he lead the AL, but he is also the league leader in home runs. Then the AL RBI leader is Jose Ramirez of the Cleveland Guardians. He's got 75 RBI. And then the leader in the AL batting average is Luis Arias of the Minnesota Twins with a .338 batting average. Then moving over to the NL home run leader is Kyle Schwarber of the Philadelphia Phillies with 29 home runs. Then the NL RBI leader, as well as the league leader, is Pete Alonso with 78 RBI with the Mets. And then the NL batting average leader is that dude with the St. Louis Cardinals, Paul Goldschmidt, holding a steady .330 batting average. The dude has been batting well over .300 this entire season. At one point, I know he was batting like .380. So he's been very, very consistent with hitting the ball this year. Then moving over to the pitchers, the AL pitchers leading the league with the lowest ERA is Shane McClanahan of the Tampa Bay Rays with a .171. That also leads the league as well. Then the AL pitchers, a pitcher who leads the league with wins is Justin Verlander of the Houston Astros. He's got 12 wins. He also leads the league with those 12 wins. And then the AL leader with saves is Romano of the Toronto Blue Jays. He has currently has 20 saves on the season. Then moving over to the NL, right now the pitcher with the lowest ERA in the NL is Sandy Alcantara with a .176. Basically, he, McClanahan, and Gonsolin, those have been the top guys with the lowest ERA this season. And they've just been going back and forth. Basically, everyone who pitches, it basically changes between one of those three. So Alcantara, he's been probably the best pitcher in the NL all season, and he's definitely maintaining that with his low ERA as well. Then the NL pitcher that leads the NL with the most wins right now is Tony Gonsolin of the Dodgers with 11 wins. And then the NL pitcher who leads the NL in saves and also the league in saves is Josh Hader of the Milwaukee Brewers with 27 saves. So right now, this week is the MLB All-Star break. Tomorrow is the MLB All-Star game. This year it's in Los Angeles. Tonight is going to be the Home Run Derby. You've got Kyle Schwarber, Pete Alonso, Kyle Seager, Juan Soto, Jose Ramirez, Julio Rodriguez, Ronald Acuna Jr., and Albert Pujols all participating tonight. Pete Alonso is actually the two-time champion, and I'm going to take him to go for three-peat. It's very rare for somebody to do something like that, which is really the only reason why I'm picking it, just because it would be cool. Yeah, I'm going to go him. But somebody who I see maybe making waves in this Home Run Derby, I'm going to go with the rookie out of Seattle, Julio Rodriguez. This guy has been, like I said, he's lit the league on fire the last month. He's been hitting home runs like no other, and he's really been a huge reason as to why the Mariners are playing some great baseball right now. And so I kind of see him maybe getting, making some waves, maybe not necessarily winning, but definitely, you know, maybe having a big round, or maybe even going to the final, something like that. Hell, or maybe even winning it. But regardless, I still think I'm going to go with Pete Alonso. And even though I'm probably not going to watch, because I really couldn't care less about any of the All-Star games, no matter what the sport is, they're just kind of boring to me. So I'm probably not going to be watching the MLB All-Star game tomorrow either. If I watch either one of them, it's just because I have really nothing else to watch at the time. Yeah, we won't have any more baseball this week until Thursday, and then everything will kick off on Thursday, and we'll get back to baseball, and then the second half of the season kicks off on Thursday. And then we had a little bit of NBA news while I was gone. First of all, the Indiana Pacers, they were making some moves all last week to try and get the Sun center DeAndre Ayton signed. And they did end up signing him to a 4-year, $133 million contract. But unfortunately for him, the Pacers, the Suns, since DeAndre Ayton is a restricted free agent, I believe, the Suns actually have the option to match whatever the Pacers are willing to pay him. And it looks like the Suns have decided they are going to end up paying DeAndre Ayton the 4-year, $133 million contract. So it looks like DeAndre Ayton is going to stay with the Phoenix Suns, which I think is a great move by them, just because he's been a huge reason as to why they've been so good the last couple of seasons. Even though they've fallen short of winning a championship, he still is a huge part of the team, and I think that was a good move just because he's young, and it's also difficult to find a center. Centers are few and far between in this league, and good ones are few and far between as well. So, and also Ayton, he's not really as injury prone as most other centers in the league, so I feel like this is a great move by the Suns to keep him. But shitty for the Pacers, because they really were making a whole bunch of moves and releasing a bunch of guys before they could to try and make this contract work. And unfortunately for them, the Phoenix Suns stepped in and said, "Nah, we're gonna keep Ayton. Thanks, though." Then also, the Portland Trail Blazers actually ended up giving Damian Lillard a 2-year extension worth $225 million. I think it's 2023, he's going to make something like $58 million. And then the following season, 2024, he's going to make $63 million. So congratulations to you, Damian Lillard. You definitely deserve to be paid, because I don't know if you're going to win in Portland, because they are not an organization known for trying to win. I'm shocked that he's even being given the extension, because they're actually usually an organization who's known for giving up on their players and trading them away. So good for him. He's definitely taken home the bag and definitely getting paid, that's for sure. And he deserves to get paid, because not only is he a great player, but he's going to be stuck in Portland for the rest of his career, it seems to be. So at least he's getting paid to stay in shitty-ass Portland. Also in some NBA news, Russell Westbrook ended up firing his agent a few days ago due to irreconcilable differences. His agent has spoken out and basically has said that the reason why they parted ways is because basically the fact that Russell Westbrook has moved from team to team to team, and he's had a new team the last, four seasons. It doesn't look good on his resume, and it actually devalues him. And so it sounds like that they had some type of disagreement, whether Westbrook wants to be traded or not from this from the Lakers, which, fingers crossed, I hope he's traded. Not for Kyrie Irving, though. I would actually rather have I'd rather stay where we're at. I don't think there's any type of improvement if it's for Kyrie Irving, but what the fuck? I haven't liked the Russell Westbrook experiment. I didn't think he was going to be a good experiment from the get-go. The fact that he fired his agent and his agent's basically saying that they parted ways because they didn't see eye to eye on what's to come, that really isn't shocking. But hopefully the Lakers will be moving on from Russell Westbrook, and hopefully it's not with Kyrie Irving. And then just the last little bit of NBA news. Looks like James Harden is going to end up re-signing with the Philadelphia 76ers, but he's not going to be signing a huge deal, which is what most people thought he would get. It sounds like Harden is finally going with the route of, I need a championship, and so I'm going to take less money and hopefully win a championship with the 76ers. Now, no deal has been signed yet, so who really knows what's going to go on here, it sounds like James Harden's finally relenting to the fact that if he wants to get paid, he's going to play for a shitty team. But if he wants to kind of sacrifice some money and hope it goes to some better players, that he should stick with the 76ers and hopefully he can win a championship. And I think that's a good move just because, you know, Joel Embiid, he is definitely, I mean, he just had, he definitely, in my opinion, was the MVP this year. Didn't go to him, unfortunately, but hey, he was definitely one of the candidates for it. And he had a spectacular season. So I kind of feel like he's in the prime of his career right now. And so he and Harden, I think they could work it out and possibly win a championship with the 76ers. So this, I feel like, is a good move by Harden if it all ends up working out for them. And then we also had a little bit of NFL news this week. The Houston Texans ended up settling all 30 lawsuits that were brought against them in the Deshaun Watson case. Basically, 30 lawsuits were filed, basically saying that the Texans knew what was going on with Deshaun Watson and that they basically they didn't really care, and they aided in what happened, and they paid those lawsuits out right quick. And the reason why you do that is because you don't want more information coming out about you, which quite a bit already has come out about the Houston Texans and Deshaun Watson. They ended up settling that shit right quick, as most wealthy organizations do. Of course, they do have a lot more money than Deshaun Watson himself. But the Texans, they took care of that shit real quick. And I know the losers who think this is just a money grab are saying that exact thing. Say, look, it's just about the money. But the Texans and Deshaun Watson all deserve to pay for this. And so I have no issues with the money grab on this one. But I'm sure plenty of crybabies have quite a few issues with it. But yeah, sucks for y'all. And but in good football news, we are just about a week away from training camp. Training camps begin next week. Actually, rookies will be reporting in the next day or so for a few teams, and then all the veterans for every team will be reporting at least by next Tuesday. So we're almost there, football fans. We are almost there. Football season, you could just taste it right here, and it's just fucking great because, you know, you're always in a drought, especially like this last month is like mostly nothing goes on with the NFL, and so it's great that training camp begins next week. You know, we still have some questions of what's going to happen with the season. You know, I just spoke on Deshaun Watson. His suspension, that hasn't been announced yet. So we'll see what happens with that. Then you also still have Jimmy Garoppolo. Is he going to get traded from the 49ers? Is he going to get released from the 49ers? Or are they going to roll with him and Trey Lance and see how that goes? Also, you know, Carl Nassib, he's still out there. The only openly gay football player right now. You know, he came out of the closet last year while still playing with the Las Vegas Raiders. And he's a free agent right now. Very solid player. Obviously not the greatest defensive end in the league, but he's definitely a good enough player who should most certainly be on a team. It's kind of shocking that he's not on a team. And I also find it kind of shocking that not a lot of people are making a big deal about it, since, you know, we still hear about the atrocities of not having that loser trash quarterback Colin Kaepernick on somebody's team. So, and that dude hasn't played in fucking years, but yet we still got to hear about, oh, somebody should sign him. Well, somebody should be signing Carl Nassib, because he actually is a current NFL player and he's actually a pretty decent NFL player. Like I said, I don't think he's going to be carrying a defense and going to be that dude, but he could definitely help a team. Hell, I wouldn't mind seeing him in a Cowboys uniform. I don't really think we need a defensive end, but hey, we could use the depth. But regardless, it's kind of pathetic that Carl Nassib has yet to be signed to an NFL team. So you might want to get with the program, NFL. Somebody's got to sign the dude, especially with training camp right around the fucking corner. With training camp right around the corner, I decided we're going to go ahead and talk about the top five NFL teams with expectations this season. And starting off with number five, who I think is going to be the Buffalo Bills. One of the reasons why I think they have such high expectations is basically over the last couple of seasons, they have made waves in the regular season. And then the playoffs roll around, and they've actually had some good playoffs. I mean, last year they played in one of the most exciting games against the Kansas City Chiefs in that overtime thriller. So it seems like they are on the precipice of becoming a championship team. And so I feel like the expectations are probably really high for the Bills this year, just because, you know, Josh Allen, he's just coming into his prime. You know, they got Stephon Diggs, but then they also signed Von Miller this offseason on defense. And I think that's going to be a huge, huge lift for them. So I definitely think the Buffalo Bills have some high expectations on them this season. Then the fourth team on my top five NFL teams with high expectations this season, I got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And the reason why is just because, you know, Tom Brady. That's all you got to say is Tom Brady. Whatever team Tom Brady is on, you expect that team to compete for a Super Bowl. Not compete and make the playoffs. I mean to compete for a Super Bowl. So 100% this team has expectations on them. You know, they have a new coach this year. They got, you know, Bruce Arians, he retired. He's in the front office now. And so they got Todd Bowles, who was their defensive coordinator, who is now the head coach. What is he going to do this year? How is he going to handle this season? Is he going to be a good, solid head coach? And like I said, you've got the Tom Brady factor. He's coming off of am I going to retire this year? Am I not going to retire this year? Then we hear all the drama about him possibly, you know, retiring, then going to Miami. And then that didn't work out because of the whole Brian Flores thing. So what's going to happen? Is Tom Brady going to have a good year? Then you've got Rob Gronkowski. He retired this year. I don't really expect to see him make any type of unretirement. And if he does, it probably wouldn't be until the playoffs or more towards the end of the season. But I just don't really think that's going to happen. And even if it does, whoop-de-doo. So this is going to be Tom Brady playing without Rob Gronkowski, which says a lot. Now, I know Tom spent a lot of his career without Rob Gronkowski, but he hasn't spent the last many years without him. So that's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. And then also, just was reading, I think it was today, that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coaches are not happy with Leonard Fournette right now, the running back, because he's weighing something like 270 pounds. And you don't need your running back to be that big. And he's really out of shape, apparently. So we'll see what happens with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But they've got some expectations on them solely because Tom Brady is their quarterback. So you expect to compete for a Super Bowl. Period. Then at number three on my top five NFL teams with high expectations this season, the Kansas City Chiefs. Basically, in my opinion, Patrick Mahomes is basically like Tom Brady. You not only expect them, his team, the Kansas City Chiefs, to compete for a playoff spot, but you actually expect them to compete for a Super Bowl. That's been the expectation for them for, what, the last, like, four seasons. And so now, this year, they're actually coming into the season with no Tyreek Hill. How is that going to affect the offense? It's definitely going to affect them in some way, shape, or form, because Tyreek Hill has been a huge driving force, and he has made some really huge plays, game-changing plays, to get them wins, not only during the regular season, but in the playoffs and in the Super Bowl. So how are the Chiefs going to react to having no Tyreek Hill anymore? Because I don't think they have anybody on that roster at wide receiver who can even compete with Tyreek Hill. Now, they still have Travis Kelce, but he's only getting older. Is he going to start getting injured? So we'll see what happens with the Chiefs, but I definitely think they've got high expectations on themselves as well. Then at number two, one of my top five NFL teams with high expectations going into this season, the Cincinnati Bengals. And that's really just because they represented the AFC last year in the Super Bowl. And nobody really expected them to get there. It was kind of a fluky playoff run, but hey, they still got there. They still dominated, and they still had a great second half of the season. Now, what can they do? Are they going to have a Super Bowl hangover? You know, Joe Burrow, he's had a solid two seasons in the league. Now what's going to happen with the rest of his career? If they actually happen to crash and burn, are they going to be the same old Bengals? Are they going to be able to dominate the division? Because, you know, they do have the Ravens in there. And while the Steelers no longer have Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, they're still a powerhouse team, and that division beats up on each other all the time. And the Browns are a question mark as well. So you really don't know what you're going to get from the Bengals, but they definitely have high expectations on them this year just because they went to the Super Bowl. And with that being said, the number one team on my top five NFL teams with expectations going into this season, the Los Angeles Rams. They are the defending Super Bowl champs. They do have a solid squad. They didn't really lose a step. You know, they've got Matthew Stafford, who is coming off a spectacular season. How's he going to bounce back this year? They still have Aaron Donald. He came back. He's going to be a huge force on the defense. And you know, for the most part, the core players are back. The coaching staff is back besides the offensive coordinator. So the Rams and their division, I think every other team has basically lost a step. I mean, the Seahawks traded away Russell Wilson, so they're going to be a shitty team. The 49ers, who the hell knows what's going to happen with them at quarterback, so they're at this point a shitty team. And then you got the Cardinals, who have Kyler Murray, who's a solid quarterback, but he's been acting like a twat this entire offseason, so who the hell knows what's going to happen with them. So I kind of see the Rams. They should absolutely dominate this division. And so let's see what happens throughout the rest of the season. Are they going to be able to handle the Packers? Are they going to be able to handle the Buccaneers? Are they going to be able to continue the high-flying offense that they've had over the last couple of seasons? Or are they going to crash and burn? Who knows? But I definitely think they have the most expectations just based upon solely they are the defending Super Bowl champs. So every team that they face this year is going to give it their all because of that one fact that they won it all. But they're still a solid team. Like I said, still have Stafford, still have Aaron Donald, still have Sean McVay as their coach. And, you know, they've got probably the best receiving core in the league still, even though Odell Beckham Jr., he hasn't re-signed with them or anything. But, I mean, overall, this defense, you know, they did lose Von Miller, but Von Miller was only there last year for the second half of the season. So we'll see what they do. They did make some big moves this offseason. The Rams don't sit stagnant. At least they haven't over the last since Sean McVay took over. So, but they definitely have some high expectations on them this year just because they're the defending Super Bowl champs. So with that being said, I am looking so forward to football season. It's not going to be difficult to find things to discuss, like it is now, because especially this week, the MLB All-Star break, like I said, we don't have any baseball till Thursday. So, the rest of my, rabid sports fans, we're all just going to be sitting here trying to find anything to watch. We're probably just going to stare at our fantasy baseball rosters and overanalyze those, until Thursday, just to pass some time, because ain't shit on, other than the All-Star game, and the All-Star game is boring as fuck. So the rest of my sports fans, I hope you all make it through the week. I know it's going to be difficult. We're all going to be jonesing for some sports. So, hopefully y'all can hold on till Thursday. I know I've got the shakes right now as I speak. I'll talk to you fucktards on Friday. Peace.